primarily about prison labor. Describe some of the jobs at Deer Ridge Prison and how much the prisoner is paid.
I had one of the better jobs until August, mid-August, and my job was as clerk of physical plant. I kept the second set of books for physical plant for spending. I also did maintenance management, computerized maintenance management, and inventory. I earned 14 points. I could earn anywhere depending on what call-outs I have, what days of work they call me in for, anywhere from $35 up to $65 a month. And that's a higher paying job. If you're working as an orderly cleaning the living areas, the day room areas, the showers, what have you, you can earn as little as $17 to $30 a month. I mean, you're not earning very much. And you have to think that even at very minimum, people have to pay for hygiene. And hygiene has gotten considerably more expensive. Everything in commissary has gotten considerably more expensive. My first interaction with DOC was in 2007. And the pay wage, the PRAS points that we get have not increased. However, the amount that commissary, our cost for hygiene and what have you, has increased exponentially. It's very difficult to survive like that.
You know, one way that people can help out with this issue is by calling Superintendent Tim Causey, who's the warden at Deer Ridge Correctional Institution, at 541-325-5999, extension 5226. Again, that's 541-325-5999, extension 5226. And tell them to serve the prisoners nutritious, healthy meals fit for human consumption.
We just heard from Richard Molnar, incarcerated in the Deer Ridge Correctional Institution in Madras, Oregon. And also Tyler B. from the Portland chapter of the Incarcerated Workers Organizing Committee and Anarchist Black Cross. For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Anthony B. and the Born Fire Band with Cool John Cool, Speaker Minds, MC Mike Crenshaw, and more on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. Anthony B. grew up in Northwest Jamaica. He tours extensively all over the world and is known for fiery high-energy performances. Again, that's Anthony B. and the Born Fire Band with Cool Johnny Cool, Speaker Minds, and MC Mike Crenshaw on Friday, November 4th at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under the community events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio, the show of, by, and for working people. Your host tonight is me, John Walsh. Jamie Partridge, co-host, can't make it tonight, but is here in spirit. We're going to talk about elections, and probably a lot of people now are very aware of the presidential election. Lots of publicity about that one, very contentious and raucous. However, your vote might actually matter more in elections close to home, and that's what we're going to focus on, Multnomah County specifically. We're going to talk about the campaign finance measure, Measure 26-184, in the race for the county commissioner in District 4. And here with us in studio to talk about the campaign finance measure is Moses Ross, who is a member of the Multnomah County Charter Review Committee that recommended it, and also Amanda Schrader, who's a candidate for the county commissioner position in District 4. Welcome to Labor Radio, folks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Moses, let's start with you and talk about campaign finance and ballot measure 26-184. The ballot title for this reads, limits contributions, expenditures, requires disclosure in Multnomah County candidate elections. So what specifically would this measure do?
Good question. What's exciting about this is that it addresses the three-legged stool of campaign finance. It puts a cap on contributions for individuals and entities of $500 per election cycle. It limits the organizations that can contribute. So expressly, it does not allow for corporations to donate to campaigns. The expenses, it puts it a cap on the expenses that an independent expenditure committee can make into a race. If I remember correctly, it's a $10,000 limit. But then it also allows for the formation of small donor committees to help stimulate individual to use the group power of individual donations of up to $100 to be able to pool their resources and to give in a larger chunk, up to $10,000, to one particular candidate. And then finally, the one that's very important to me is the disclosure requirement. It requires that all advertising from a campaign must include the top five aggregate contributors to that campaign. So, for instance, this particular one was based, a good example of it was a city in California here recently. Chevron was attempting to influence a local election through tons of advertising, but because of the disclosure requirements that California already has, every advertisement said paid for by Chevron, and it ended up losing, every single one of their candidates lost because people really understood where the money was coming that was, you know, in opposition to it. So we felt we had to address those three stools to make it a real positive attempt at reform.
Now, when you say we, who's the we who got this measure on the ballot in the first place?
Good question. Multnomah County is very unique in the sense that every 6 years it appoints individuals from the county, a broad cross-section in each district, to serve on a committee to review the charter, which is in essence the bylaws of Multnomah County, and we're tasked with the credo, is there a problem? If there is a problem, how do we fix it? And in the past, it's been used to make changes along the lines of, well, like currently the other measures that we have on the ballot is the appoint changing the sheriff from an elected position to an appointed position, or to extend the term limits from 2 terms to 3 terms. But then we started to realize that campaign finance was also an issue that could be addressed through the charter. And so upon investigation of it, we, over a 6-month period, we found examples of even just as close as Seattle, where they have enacted types of campaign finance reform very successfully. And it's broadened the ability for talented voters, talented folk, to be able to run. So we kind of used that as a model and picked the best, making sure to address the three-legged stool that I referred to. It came out of the subcommittee unanimously, and then a majority of the members of that of the overall committee voted to let it go on to the ballot in November.
How many folks were on either the subcommittee or the overall one, you recall?
Well, let's put it this way. It passed 7-6.
Okay. Oh, tight squeeze there.
It was a tight squeeze, right, but we got it right through, and I'm very pleased about that. And I think that it's an opportunity for, it's a real opportunity, I feel, for the values of Multnomah County to be able to shine through, to be expressed in how we contribute money to be able to affect our elections. It is very limited. It's limited right now to the Multnomah County commissions, elections within Multnomah County, the commissioners, the chair, the DA, the auditor, and the sheriff, currently at least.
And there must have been, given that tight vote, there must have been some analysis that different folks had about what's going on now, about whether there was a problem, was not a problem, who's benefiting, who's being harmed.
Very much so. I mean, just from myself and my own opinion on what I've learned through it all, I found that there is a lot of money obviously being spent in these elections. The last chair election for Multnomah County chair spent over $460,000 to win their election. You know, I know Amanda is probably very familiar with the need to be able to network within certain groups to be able to make sure that you are well funded to be able to get your message out. You know, it is a challenge. And this is just leveling the playing field. I feel that, you know, somebody of Amanda's talent shouldn't have to, should be talking to voters. That's who she should be doing.
Amanda, just to break in, I'm going to mix our subjects a little bit here, but how much of your time do you figure has to go into fundraising versus, you know, putting issues out there?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I haven't been a great fundraiser. I don't have friends with deep pockets. I have friends with coin jars on their counters, you know, and I am the labor candidate. I'm the working class. I'm out there. My campaign manager has made this all about the issues instead of about the fundraising because we simply don't have the resources. I don't know anybody who has the money who can allow me to raise $40,000, $60,000, $100,000 for this race. So my campaign manager is really focused on voter interaction. So we do a lot of door knocking. We do a lot of door knocking, hit community events when we can, but mostly all day Saturday and Sunday and after work. I've been out there door knocking. I managed to squeeze in a soccer game here and there to see my kid, but one of my son, but my daughter, her friends, my son, his friends, my campaign manager and his family, we, along with a steady group of absolutely amazing volunteers, have been knocking on doors and have hit thousands of doors this election season.
And see, and that's the way it should be, you know, in my view, and of the view of the committee, that there has to be a better way for good candidates to be able to share their message with others, and then you do, and that's accomplished by leveling the playing field.
So, how would this measure? Following up on that, how does this measure affect the ability of workers and unions?
Good question.
To be able to get involved?
Yeah, that's, yeah. Well, specifically what it does is that it creates what is called to, referred to as a small donor committee. And a small donor committee has a cap of $100 individual donation to it and a maximum contribution of $10,000 to any particular campaign, to any given campaign. So from that perspective, this works well for membership organizations to be able to empower those members to be able to pull their resources to be able to then in turn contribute to a candidate. The idea that there's, once again, a level playing field, everybody's capped at $10,000, but the idea that the individual members can express their opinions about a pro or a con with a candidate, the small donor committee allows for that and encourages it.
How do you track for a small donor? So I go from this broadcast to a labor council meeting, yeah, and typically throw in $5 at the door for the political fund and go to maybe 12 meetings. Actually, there's fewer than 12 I make, but I should go to 12 meetings a year. So that's maybe $60 a year.
Sure.
But no one's writing down my name as I contribute. So how would the small donor committee track those contributions? What would be the process to verify that?
Well, there would have to be an expansion of the current reporting process. You know, ORSTAR, the Secretary of State's office, currently is the touchstone for all contributions and expenditures in all races. County offices can relatively easily include a variable, I would think, to get that aggregate that would be needed. And then, you know, there is more reporting that would need to be done, in the sense that, you know, you wouldn't be able to just give a $5 bill at the door. You would need to give your name and information like that so the aggregate could be tracked. But I just don't think it would cost very much because we're already set up to do it. It's just another variable to be tracked of an existing tracking system.
And what would be the effect on the already existing so-called political action committees, which some labor organizations have, also other organizations have, progressive or otherwise, already has set up these funds for political purposes? How would they relate to this measure?
Well, they would be able to form small donor committees and make a contribution, and there would be, you know, the key word is entity, and there would be a cap on how much they would be able to contribute. You know, so they'd be maxed out at 10,000, and that's all they would be, the same as everybody else. You know,
and also the 500 individual max.
Correct.
I recall.
Correct. Right. And let me also, if I may, just kind of address the elephant in the room when it comes to this measure, and that is the idea of the constitutionality of the issue. Yes, Oregon has ruled 15 plus years ago that expression of that contributions can't be capped because it's an expression of free speech, and I respect that. We respect that, and it's put a stifling, though. It's had a stifling effect on any kind of campaign finance reform efforts statewide all that time. And you know, we embrace the concept that this would be challenged. Legally challenged, because we felt that the times have changed, and we're not going to see that kind of a movement of campaign finance reform on the state level. There's just too many folks that have a vested interest. I mean, it's interesting, you know, when we were receiving testimony from elected officials and from statewide officials and such, that you know, elected officials, everybody to a T all said, "Oh, we agree in the need for campaign finance reform," but. No one could agree on when or how. And so we've given it that. We've provided that to them through the power of the county's unique method of accountability through the charter.
So those of us who are Multnomah County voters, if we pass this measure, not only change what applies to campaign finance in Multnomah County, we also set up a test case for wider scenarios.
Oh, absolutely.
If this gets challenged in court in the state or federal courts for that matter.
Very much so. And I think, you know, and we do touch the mother lode when it comes to corporations not being able to contribute. You know, in a fantasy world, perhaps I think of this case, you know, being the challenge case to it.
To Citizens United, for example?
God forbid, yeah. You know, but it has to start somewhere. And I think that, let me give a great example of this already happening in the past, and that was when the Multnomah City commissioners went against national trends and enacted gay marriage licenses, allowed for gay marriage licenses to be issued. They knew it was the right thing to do, and went ahead and did it because it was an expression of our values here in the county.
And since we are on Labor Radio, what unions have endorsed this measure and what reasons have they given for doing that?
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've had a good variety of labor organizations endorse it or decide not to take an opinion on it, which is satisfying because they recognize, I would think that's because they recognize this, but yet, you know, it's who knows what could happen with it. And I get that. But we do have some good endorsements. The letter carriers have endorsed it. If I remember correctly, as I sit here and I try to pull them up, we do have a couple that have endorsed. And
probably the voter's guide would show people that the pamphlet.
Absolutely, yeah, right. Absolutely, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yep. I don't mean to be off the game on that one. I should have been a little bit more prepared with the actual names.
That's okay. I should warn folks before I ask them specifics. But since we're about halfway through this show and want to have plenty of time for both topics here, we're going to shift to the District 4 race and Amanda. So Amanda, also for the record, we did invite the other candidate in this race, Lori Stegman. She was not available to join us, so we have attempted to provide equal access here. Amanda Schrader, can you tell us something about your background and why you decided to run?
Absolutely. Thank you, John. A little bit about myself, something that I'm very proud of. I'm third generation union here in the great state of Oregon, following labor leaders, my both of my folks, my grandmother, actually a great-grandfather by marriage, was an organizer for the machinists, so maybe I should say I'm fourth generation. I guess, you know, you want to know why I've decided to run. It's about time that the working class have a seat at the table. I have, while I haven't been in a political election before or elected to public office, I have my entire life been an advocate for the working class and for several organizations and causes that reflect labor values. And I've done it on my own volition, on my own time, with my family, my friends, mobilizing and organizing around issues without any thought to, you know, can I put this in a box? Can I frame it as a politician? And So my entire life has been one of service. I was in the Army for a couple of years, kind of a weird thing, but it was a great experience. I met my husband, and we've been married for 15 years. We have two great kids who are in public school. My mother is a retired teacher, so I wholly support all of our public schools and think that we need to invest a lot more in our public schools, which is why I'm very much for Measure 97. I guess when you ask why I decided to run for office, ultimately it came down to, in 2012, Rush Limbaugh called a young woman a reprehensible name for trying to get comprehensive reproductive health care. And it made me so angry, because I'm raising a son and a daughter, and I want them to live in a world where they are respected as human beings and they have access to comprehensive health care and are entitled to their actual identities of whomever they are without any kind of explanation to somebody else. When he did that, I got really upset and organized the Unite Against the War on Women rally that was held in Salem on April 12th of 2013, which was great. And we had amazing, amazing women show up. Kate Brown spoke, Margaret Carter spoke, Suzanne Bonamici, Ellen Rosenblum. Oh my gosh, the list is so long. And if I try to name all of them, I will mess up. So just the most amazing, amazing group of women I could have possibly ever imagined got up there and talked about what we need to do collectively to ensure that there's some equity down the road. And so I joined a program called Emerge, which prepares Democrat women for public office. It was an incredible program. I was very excited. And then in 2013, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. So I was out for a year, but it was a really good year. It was a really good year. It was a lot of struggles. But what it did is it grounded me. And whereas I sit on a human rights committee for my national union, I'd been doing work on policy and helping draft legislation and stuff at a national level. I hadn't been focusing on what's been going on in my backyard. And so when I got grounded, I really got to see what was going on. And it really inspired me to want to step out and become a decision maker here in Multnomah County. And that's why I'm running for county commissioner.
So you mentioned health care and the right of access to it and to be treated fairly in terms of health care. Also, we're talking before the show, you mentioned housing. So is housing another issue that's a factor for you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's we are in crisis right now with housing. We need to absolutely, I believe very strongly that we need to have a tenants' bill of rights. We need to enact rent stabilization, and we need to start documenting all eviction processes, because of the fact I was floored when I discovered that no cause of evictions were not documented. So I am incredibly concerned that no cause evictions are unfairly targeting people of color, people who don't fit heteronormative standards, people of anything out of the Western Eurocentric patriarchal paradigm, really. So I really think that it's really critical that we document and ensure that no-cause evictions are limited.
How about other issues that are main ones for your campaign?
Well, there's a couple of things that I really want to see happen. There's health and human services is my top priority. It's I want to see us really, really ratchet up our commitment for mental health treatment and drug addiction treatment. I want to see a greater investment in the success of children through our ancillary benefits, specifically SUN Schools, the Schools Uniting Neighborhoods. I'd like to marry the curriculum that the Oregon Food Bank has called Cooking Matters with the SUN Schools at fifth grade level. So we teach kids from age 10 and up how to cook, how to be healthy, full and nourish their bodies, because a lot of the times that their parents have taken this course, they're on their way to their second job that pays abysmal wages, and they're not there with their kids anyway. So I think that I'd really like to empower children by teaching them to be healthy. And I think the Oregon Food Bank offers just an incredible program that we can just marry with our son's schools and do some great things there. I wanted to see menstrual equity enacted. All of our public restrooms in county buildings provide soap, toilet paper, some kind of drying mechanism for all people who use them, but they don't provide menstrual services for, or menstrual products for girls, and that's not equitable, you know, because it's not a choice. Menstrual equity is something that I'd really like to see happen here in East County, and I'd like to also grow the SummerWorks program into a year-round program, internship program for juniors and seniors, because we have really poor, we have really high attrition rates, especially in East County. And I would like to bring in high school juniors and seniors into the county, rotate them through various jobs, have them see how their government works, because a lot of times most people have no idea. And so I think really making accessible the government to these young people might very well bring in our next generation of employees for the county.
And for those who don't know, you may have guessed already, District 4 is East County. So what about the historical issues of East County being the neglected part of Multnomah County?
Well, I see that a little bit. You know, there's a lot of one of the things that really spurred me into running for office was the fact that we have so many pedestrian vehicle accidents in East County. We have a lot of unimproved roads, lack of sidewalks, and inadequate street lighting. And that's a big concern. You know, it's you walk down the street in downtown Portland and you'll see crystal raindrops embedded in the sidewalk, you know, for aesthetic value. And you walk down the street off of 164th Avenue and there are no sidewalks. So that's not okay. That's not equitable. And I really want to ensure that the resources go where the resources are needed. You know, and I often use that as the braces argument. I have two kids. One kid needed braces, one did not. So the kid who needed braces got braces, but we didn't pay the other kid $3,800 because he didn't need braces. So I want to make sure that resources go where they're needed. And I really want to make sure that the people of East County and all of Multnomah County have the opportunity not just to scrape it together and survive. I really want to see our community thriving.
And in terms of supporters, endorsers, who's backing you in the campaign? Who's on your side?
Well, the Northwest Oregon Labor Council has endorsed me, Teamsters Council 37, the Carpenters. Oh, gosh, Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Senator Michael Dembro, Representative Chris Gorsuch has been by my side the whole time. Really, really great. Lots of unions, the Oregon National Organization for Women. Mother PAC has endorsed me. Basic Rights Oregon has greenlighted my campaign. Just a lot of really great organizations that I know that I've given a lot to in the past, so that they know my work ethic and they know my abilities. And so they're really, really working to help me get into office.
And as we mentioned earlier, your opponent, Lori Stegman, was not able to join us tonight, not available. What are the main differences between yourself and your opponent?
I think the fact that I support Measure 97 and Lori does not, I think is very, very telling. Because there's a lot of discussion about we need tax reform, but there's no commitment as to what it can be. I'm somebody going in there with a plan. Lori has a lot of government experience, and I think that's great, but I haven't heard her talk about anything that she's actually going to do, just what she's done or what she's been part of in the past. And she's been part of some great things, but I really, really want to be a proactive leader in Multnomah County in the future.
So if you're going to summarize, if you probably already do this a bunch of times, at the end of your campaign speech or your conversation on the doorstep, what's your short summary statement of why people should vote for you?
Because I'm one of them. I have had my finger on the pulse of the working class my entire life. And I would never presume to know what it is that they need. I will always ask, and my door will always be open. And I will do my very best to represent the interest of every single man, woman, and child in Multnomah County.
Thank you very much, Amanda Schrader. Thank you also, Moses Ross. We've been talking both about the election for the Multnomah County Commission seat for District 4 and about ballot measure 26-184. I have to look at those numbers. It's complicated. 26-184, which has to do with campaign finance in Multnomah County. So if you haven't voted yet, you probably got your ballot already. I got mine. Go ahead and mark that ballot and get it in the mail. Cast your vote. Make sure that your voice is heard in this election. I want to thank Danielle Parks, our engineer, my co-host Jamie Partridge. We actually wrote a bunch of the questions that I myself asked, and all the listeners who've been with us tonight. If you stay tuned, you're going to catch Prison Pipeline. If you tune in next week, you'll hear Labor Radio once again. Thank you all for joining us. Please vote.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Let Us Grow on Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps in Portland. Let It Grow celebrates the work of bringing education and the experience of gardening to incarcerated youth and adults in Oregon's correctional facilities. This event features the premiere of the documentary Can You Dig This? And a panel discussion after the film. Again, that's Let Us Grow, a benefit for growing gardens, taking place Friday, November 4th at Mercy Corps, 45 Southwest Ankeny Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City on Wednesday, October 26th, starting at 8:30 p.m. at The Know in Portland. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop beat hangout, bringing you fresh sounds from local and touring hits. Live music until 11 p.m., DJ sets 11 p.m. to close. This month features 2 North, Durazzo, Lisa Vasquez, and more.